From KQED Public Radio, this is the Capitol Notes podcast, our weekly look at California politics and government and public policy and stuff, and not surprisingly, once again, the budget.
I thought it was over. See, we were fine, Myers. While you were gone, we didn't talk about the budget once.
Just when we thought it was over.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's back. I'm John Myers from KQED. The sound effects there, as always, provided by Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly.
And co-star of the Police Academy movies.
I was going to say, you are kind of the sound effects guy on this thing. You're like the Foley artist of California.
Victor Borge, is that the...
podcast politics.
The Danish... never mind.
Never mind, Anthony. You are just... yeah, someone should cut you off. Here and at the bar.
Well, it's already 3 in the afternoon. That's what you get.
So here we are talking about the budget again, because I think that's really the only real big political news so far this week. We're taping this on Wednesday afternoon.
Unless you're Chris Norby, but that's another matter.
Well, actually, we can mention that in a moment. Right. That one race for the assembly. Boy, lucky him. He gets to come trying to solve the budget problem. Mm-hmm. So really the big development of the week, and really one, but it's a big development again. The Ledge analyst, Mac Taylor, putting out his office's annual look at the state's finances. And of course, the headline that has everybody talking, $20.7 billion deficit. It's back.
Yep.
Over the next 18 months, with $20-plus billion deficits every year after that for like the next 5 years. Not any good news, surprisingly.
Nope. And
not surprisingly.
And that's sort of a best-case scenario.
Yeah,
right?
It could be worse than that, yeah.
That's if the state wins all of the legal challenges for various pieces of the budget that are currently underway, and if there's no cost-of-living increases given to all the people who receive automatic cost of living and adjustments in the budget. And so, the conservative number is $20.7 billion.
And I don't think, somebody asked me that about this earlier. I don't think there's any surprise among anybody around the Capitol about that number. We've all been hearing a number similar to that for weeks, right?
Yep.
I mean, it may be shocking out in the rest of California. They're not paying attention to this all the time, but everybody thought it was going to be bad, and it is bad.
Yeah. It's coming up on 25% of the state's general fund revenues. That's a lot of cash.
Yeah. And what I found interesting when you break down the number a little bit, or one little interesting nugget, there's several things we could talk about for a moment. But you look at the $21 billion number. About $6 billion of that is in the current budget year.
6.3.
6.3, thank you. And about 14.4 in the budget year that we'll start debating come January. But what's interesting, of that $6 billion in the current year, about $5 billion really is unrealistic assumptions that the LAO is already calling them on.
Right.
That includes everything from prison cuts that don't look like they're going to materialize, savings in Medi-Cal that we're not going to get enough federal money or whatever the plan was, and the sale of the state workers' compensation fund
that
or the portion
happen?
Of it. That didn't happen.
Huh.
For $1 billion. The court battle that we lost over public transit money being borrowed to $800 million. So a whole bunch of things that the state thought it was going to get isn't getting.
Right.
And the thing that's interesting to me about that is if you took that away, you'd be left with about a $15 billion number,
well,
which is still a problem. But then you look at why it goes up to $20 billion in the out year, in the first out year. Well, it's because all the temporary tax increases go away. And then you look at $23 billion in 2 years. It's because we have to pay back local governments for the portion of borrowing from the July deal. In other words—
There's another piece, too.
Yeah, go ahead.
The other piece are these tax breaks or tax cuts that are set to go into effect in 2011.
The tax credits.
Yeah, on the net operating loss and—
One man's credit is another man's loophole.
Well, But you'll have a lot of large corporations in the state paying less in taxes to the tune of $1 billion, and there may be
maybe even more than that. Depending on how you define it,
right? Yeah. And there may be an initiative on the November ballot to roll that back.
Well, so as we said, nobody around here is surprised about this, but there also don't seem to be anybody. Standing up and saying, oh, I've got a great idea how to fix this.
No. My favorite press release of the day, though, came from the Speaker's office, who Speaker Karen Bass said that she was encouraged because the revenues were not dramatically different than what they had projected. That's true. The revenues were only a billion or so off, but the $5 billion in this year in budget assumptions that were made that a lot of people knew at the time were not real. Well, guess what? They turned out not to be real. And so, I mean, does anybody think that we're going to get anything different this time around? I don't.
Well, I was going to say, because, I mean, if you look at really the only three avenues you've got, and we've talked about this so many times on the podcast, the two that you should use, also known as the two really only valid ones, spending cuts and tax increases.
Right.
Or the third option we use here in California all the time is the gimmicks. You got trouble with the first two. Actually new troubles, not just the familiar troubles. The familiar troubles are Republicans don't like taxes. The governor doesn't like taxes. Democrats don't want to cut but so much. But you can't cut but so much spending. And this is what Mac Taylor, the ledge analyst, said to reporters. You got to remember you can only cut so much spending this time because the major portion of the state general fund is education and health care for the poor. And those are all controlled by federal stimulus dollars at this point because we've already tack them back to about the minimum the feds will let us spend.
Right.
You've written about maintenance of effort a lot. So.
Right. Right. And that's just it. I mean, I think a lot of the problem that you're going to see in the next budget year, I mean, sort of the problem in the current budget year was sort of patched over by the federal stimulus dollars. Some of that patch extends into the next budget year, to part of it at least. But that's, I think, where you sort of see the floor drop out is without that Band-Aid of federal stimulus dollars, that was one-time money that the state was lucky enough to get to sort of pave over what was a bad problem.
Band-Aid, paving.
You don't pave your Band-Aids? Well, if you get road rash? No. All right.
Go ahead.
If you're calling for consistency, you came to the wrong podcast.
Sorry, please. But I would call that – but let's use your first metaphor. It's a pretty big Band-Aid. I mean, Band-Aid sounds like it could
dollars.
Be – yeah, it could be just like, you know, something covering a nick. I mean, it's like the size of a big piece of gauze, right?
A few billion.
Okay.
A few billion worth of patching.
One man's gauze is another man's. Anyway,
okay.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Keep going.
I have no idea what
you were
talking
just basically
about.
Saying that when that money evaporates, we're screwed.
Oh, well, thank you for the paraphrase, Mr. Mike. Yes, I rest my case, Your Honor.
I just want to get right to the point.
Okay.
But, I mean, yeah, that's a big issue. And even before the money evaporates, again, when you can't touch those areas without really bigger problems. I mean, the ledge analyst, again, is saying we need to look at tax increases. We need to look at revenue increases in some way, shape, or form. And you've talked about one way, which is, you know, suspending some of those tax credits.
Right.
The other thing I asked Mac Taylor today, and he kind of looked at the rest of his experts, too, because we're going to hear this a lot.
Stumped him, huh?
No, not really. It's like Stump the Band or
Stump the LAO.
That sounds like a great game show. Stump the Ledge
Coming
Analyst.
Soon to a website near you.
Now you've got me off.
Ha,
I know. When I asked Mac Taylor and his staff today about something that you're starting to hear kind of percolate out there about whether or not the temporary tax increases have had a discernible negative impact on the California economy, because that was the argument for not passing them, which was that they would, you know, make the economic recession that much worse. Taylor and I think he had to look at the guys who know. They all said, no, we can't measure one. We can't say that there's been no impact, but we don't see anything in the data that shows a demonstrable impact. I would expect to hear Democrats make that argument again, because you're already starting hearing it on the internet some, aren't you? A little percolating of, you know, all the doomsday scenarios of the tax increases didn't come true.
Well, and I'm sure also, this is off the top of my head here, but I'm sure that there will be a rhetorical fight over if you just vote to maintain taxes at their current levels, right? Even though they're set to roll back. Is that a tax increase? Or not? I mean, politically, is it a tax increase? And technically, I mean, is that a 41 vote? Is that a simple majority vote to maintain taxes at their current level? Or is that a two-thirds vote? I'm sure there's probably opinion on both sides, and this might be something we hear about coming up here in the months ahead.
Shocker. We could go to court over that one.
Hey, but, you know, as long as you kick the can down the road. I mean, I really wonder what the governor's going to come out with in January, because, I mean, if you look, this guy's heading into his last year in office, and he feels like he's been overwhelmed by the budget the last 2 years. And I get the sense, just from talking to folks in the administration and the way the governor's acting, is that he's sort of committed to not be bogged down by the budget this year. There are things on his plate that he wants to do. And so the question is, I mean, what sort of plan does the governor come up with? And is there a way to come up with some sort of plan that will not have the, you know, the deep partisan vitriol that we've seen engulf this place for the last 2 years?
Yeah, I got a plan. It's called making us a territory and not a state. You know what I'm talking about?
Maybe Oregon will annex us.
If you didn't see this, there was the Wall Street Journal quoted this. I think it was from a forum that the Pew organization did, where Mike Jeunesse, the governor's budget director, was on a panel, I think, with the budget director from Michigan. Mike Jeunesse, who has announced he's stepping down as budget director, leaving, retiring. So it gets to be somebody else's fun and exciting task.
Mm-hmm. He's had enough.
But Jeunesse was quoted as saying that he spent part of 2009 not only researching the issue of could the state declare bankruptcy, but could the state – I mean, I still try to fathom this one, how it would like help us, except that I guess it puts the feds on the hook. Could the state become a territory and basically step back from being a state, and therefore the feds would be in charge of our finances?
Would they erase our star on the flag if that happened?
Right. You put a half star or a –
Could we be a commonwealth like Virginia?
Maybe the star would be an asterisk. 49 states and an asterisk and territory.
Right.
Actually, a territory, Puerto Rico is a territory, isn't it?
Well,
so we would be on Puerto Rico status.
Do I have to get my passport back?
Anyway, okay. You're right. These are all questions we'd have to ponder. I just think, you know, and Mike Jeunesse, for people who know him, I mean, he's a very, very common sense, straight ahead kind of approach budget guy. I mean,
clearly.
He's not. Well, the point is, I mean, he's, you know. He's not the kind of guy who would be out looking at stuff like that if he really wasn't just trying to figure out the impossible fix.
Well, and this is interesting, sort of looking politically at what we were talking about last week with the water deal, is if this is sort of setting the scene for what we're going to be talking about for the next 12 months, is this really the environment that that proponents of the water bond want to go to voters and ask them to borrow a $10 billion more dollars.
$11.1. Right.
That's right. So, and, you know, I mean, I guess that remains to be seen. There will be all sorts of politics. I mean, remember, next year is an election year. There will be candidates for governor not talking about the budget, not the details anyway. Well, we need to eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse, and then that will magically sealed the budget gap.
30,000-foot budget discussion on the campaign trail.
But it'll be interesting to see how the political layer overlays and informs the nuanced and sophisticated budget discussion that we've come to expect out of our lawmakers here in Sacramento.
Well, especially, thinking about all of the legislators who will be up for election in 2010.
Running
so
for various offices.
Right, so here they are fending off campaign attacks at the same time they're in Sacramento trying to figure out what the policy decision should be.
And many of them are running against each other.
Hmm.
So,
you
know, good times.
Just leaves for a protracted battle, it seems like. You know, and the other things that I just quickly mentioned about this budget analysis, I mean, it's true there was theoretically some not so bad news in it, which is that the economy doesn't seem to be any worse. Just doesn't seem to be that much better.
Great.
That's kind of what you said with the speaker's written statement. But you know, it also the LAO analysis assumes no cost of living increases. I mean, that's one of the things that didn't get talked a lot about, I think, out of that budget deal that does have a lasting impact, which is that, and I think, you know, the governor's gotten some credit on this and probably deservedly so, that one of the concessions that he wanted is he wanted the elimination of a lot of the automatic cost of living increases for a lot of these state programs. That in the old system, you had to have a bill to get rid of the cost of living increases. They would happen with, you know, automatically on their own.
Right.
Now you have to have a piece of legislation to actually grant them. Now it doesn't impact some issues like, you know, K-12 is still pretty much controlled by Proposition 98. That's a whole different can of worms. But that impacts a lot of different parts of state government. One of the things that's really interesting out of this report is talking about the salaries of state workers, and that this assumes that there are no pay raises for most state workers for another 5 years, and it's been 2 years since they got one before, and they're already facing a furlough system that is supposed to end at the end of the fiscal year. But who knows? I mean, maybe we could be talking about that again.
Right, and that was unclear. I didn't catch the details, whether the out-year calculation assumes that the furloughs will continue.
It does not. Okay. It does not. Mac Taylor said it assumes that they end on June 30.
But, you know, there are a lot of lawsuits challenging the legality of the furloughs. And if the furloughs are ruled to be illegal, I mean, you know, would the state be on the hook to pay workers back? I mean, it raises all sorts of questions. I think it's one of the unknowns that was in the LAO report. I mean, the assumption of the LAO report is that all of the legal challenges the state faces, the state ends up winning. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So
yeah. That hasn't been the track record of the last few years. We've lost quite a few of those battles in court.
And in fact, a lot of these things, I think, get put into the budget in order to be able to score savings, even though the state knows, you know, and the lawmakers know that they're going to lose in court. I mean, this we saw this with some of the taking of the redevelopment agency money. There was $350 million, I believe, in the last budget. Or was it $1.3 billion?
They were different budgets.
I'm getting my numbers confused here.
Don't be a numbers guy. Stay high. $30,000.
A lot of money recently that we took.
Well said.
there was a court precedent on this very taking of the money, and that the budget makers went ahead and put the exact same language in so that they could write down a savings, knowing full well that it would probably be overruled in court.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. I mean, there's just so many of these different moving parts, and we have the same dynamic we've had, and we have fewer choices than it seems like we have had in years past and an election year. So what we're going to be doing all next winter?
Moping
about the budget.
Complaining.
And one of the things too that I think you wanted to talk about too is that we're going to have a few different people involved in the negotiation process, staff people, whatnot, especially in the administration's perspective.
Right. Well, and this is something you alluded to earlier with Mike Genest.
We're all alluding,
or you mentioned earlier with Mike Genest leaving. There's going to be a new director of finance, and the governor today appointed a new cabinet secretary. Scott Reed is the sixth now to serve in that job.
Number six in 6 years.
Yeah, 7 years. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Six, seven. Yep. Not exactly. It's like being, never mind. It's a tough gig. The old cabinet secretary, Victoria Bradshaw, is leaving and taking her old job as the Secretary of Labor. I get the sense that there's a couple more moving parts that we haven't seen play out yet. We also saw a familiar face, Fred Aguirre, a former cabinet secretary, returning to the Horseshoe today as a deputy chief of staff, whatever that means. I think that the governor is trying to assemble a team. I mean, it's the end of an administration. I think a lot of people want out. You know, this is sort of a natural time, and the governor is trying to remain focused going into his last year to have a team in place that's loyal to him and is going to try to actually get something done.
And not on the same level, because this is a larger level issue, but this is the kind of thing that you insider newspaper news organization looks for all the time. So you might be able to tell me something. This just came off the top of my head here. But on the legislative perspective, you have a speaker who's termed out of office.
Right.
At the end of 2010. And the question is there going to be a new speaker involved in budget debate? Is there going to be a speaker fight going on in the middle of this? And how, and again, I don't have any intel. You're the inside guy. But, I mean, I would just think that could complicate the legislative negotiations over a budget.
Well, it's not just the speaker. Remember, if Abel Maldonado is selected as lieutenant governor, there'll be an opening in the Senate, and Sam Blakesley, the current Assembly Republican leader, would run for that seat.
There's some dominoes that would have to fall
there
first.
Probably have to step down as Republican leader, and so there could be two new faces in the Big Five this year. So there is a lot of uncertainty, and what this does for trying to build any sort of rapport or momentum, with familiar faces. It seems like every time we go into the budget negotiations, there's somebody new in the room. I mean, Dennis Hollingsworth took over as Republican leader in February. Sam Blakesley, after that, I don't know, was it last spring, summer, last time? And now we could have two more faces in the room next year. And it just complicates matters because people have to become familiar with negotiating styles
And it also comes at a time where the Big Five process is about as unpopular as it's ever been with rank and file lawmakers.
Right. That's
when you hear from time and time again how many of those legislators feel as though they've been shut out of the process because of this, leaders and the governor get together, smoke a stogie, come up with deal X. So, I mean, and there are a lot of, they're called goo-goo types, but good government types who would argue that that's not a bad thing, that we should be getting rid of the Big Five, that the Big Five is not part of the actual process that the founders or anyone anticipated would be happening. So anyway.
Right. It's not. And even if you do have a Big Five process, it no longer guarantees that you have experts in the room. I mean, you know, the Big Five process, I think, started under Governor Duke Majan. And, you know, that was a time before term limits where a lot of the leaders had experience. And the idea was you get the experienced hands in the room negotiating the deal. I'm not sure you can make that case anymore that that's what the Big Five represents.
Right. Last thing, and we'll probably wrap up this podcast since that was really the big news of the week.
Other than my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday. How old are you?
Well, my birthday was in September, but you were gone. I just figured.
I fell for that. I fell for that. See, now and here I had a serious point. That's okay. No, I just want to say quickly, I mean, we talked about this last week with the water deal and the legacy of Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I just come back when this new budget data, again, I think, makes it an interesting discussion about what is Arnold Schwarzenegger's legacy as governor? What will be written in the history books about his time as governor? How much of it can be anything other than the state's finances, given that that's really what the recall was about? All of these other issues are important. Infrastructure, water, absolutely. The environment, not discounting any of that. But that was not talked about in the campaign 2003. You and I were there.
Right.
I didn't hear about water. I heard about the state's finances, the deficit, the crazy deficit spending, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And those problems persist. I mean, I think if you're talking legacy, though, you've got to look 10, 15, 20 years out. You know, we talked about this last week. And will it be Arnold Schwarzenegger, the environmentalist? You know, will it be Arnold Schwarzenegger, the builder? I mean, if the state's finances eventually do recover over the next 10, 15 years, and you would hope that they would at least improve, does some of that stuff go away as you get further and further away from it? And are there other things that are left behind that are more lasting? And I think the administration is focused on this. I think you're going to see some ideas in the state of the state. I think there's a political reform agenda that the governor is still committed to, whether it's the open primaries on the June ballot or changing the term limits law, which looks like it's headed for the November ballot, or other things that the governor supports. I think that he could get involved in. Then we have all these larger changes, you know, being proposed by groups like California Forward and the Bay Area Council.
But does he open himself up to criticism then that he's trying to change the discussion from what the discussion was and the reason for his time as governor? I mean, doesn't that open him up to some criticism that, you know, he's deflecting, for lack of a better term, you know, what the issue really is, what the voters care about?
Yes, but I think that his answer to this has always been that the fact that we're having so many problems just with the day-to-day operations of the state reflect a larger systemic problem, and that he's always sort of, you know, since the very beginning, and whether it was the recall itself and going straight into the special election in 2005, this is a governor that's tried and failed largely to make systemic changes. I think he's going to take one more shot next year.
Well, there you go. There's the prediction.
Ta-da.
We'll see if it comes true.
Okay.
And with that, we'll leave you until next time. We'll leave you immediately. For Anthony York at Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.